My soul follows the rising sun. I live the path of honor. So go to hell and leave me alone, because we just watched Samurai Cop 2 Deadly Vengeance on
B-Movie Mania!
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania! And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and crazy Chris Hudson.
Hello and welcome to B-Movie Mania, a podcast where the four of us sit around and dissect B-movies. We got a really good one this time. So I'm Jason Halls, and with me in the B-Movie Mania crew is Mike Hayes.
Hiya, baby.
Chris Hudson.
Hello.
And writer, director, sex symbol, Paul Brooks.
Holler.
Only one of those is correct.
We'll let the audience decide which. So this week we watched Samurai Cop 2 Deadly Vengeance. This was, you know, my pick, and I was really looking forward to this one. I am a pretty big fan of Samurai Cop. We watched it for one of the B-movie marathons that we do, the 24-hour.
Number three.
Yeah, the third 24-hour B-movie marathon.
Which I have no memory of.
You know, I actually did go back and watch the first one again.
I rewatched the first one as well.
So Samurai Cop 2, it's available on Amazon Prime. That's where we all saw it. It was released by Cineridge Entertainment, which was the company that restored the original Samurai Cop to HD from the 35mm negatives. The original kind of turned into a cult hit. It was done by a director named Amir Shervan. Not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, who is unfortunately no longer with us. He died in 2006, and the original Samurai Cop was his last movie.
You know, it's similar because the star of Samurai Cop and Samurai Cop 2, what, Matt Hannon or something? I read he was rumored dead for a long time, too.
Yes. He actually goes by Matthew Carradus or Carradus.
Yeah, I was confused about now, that.
Yeah, I think the reason he goes by that is because this was a movie that they wanted to do, and they all thought Matt Hannon was dead because a guy in Hollywood who was in the business named Matt Hannon had died, and that word had made it around. So they were moving ahead with the second film with Mark Frazier, who plays the buddy cop.
Frank.
Frank. It was going to be him and Joe Marshall's daughter against the Katana gang and all the other gangs. But then Matthew Carradus's daughter, I should say Joe Marshall's daughter, Joe Marshall's daughter in real life. It's easier to say. She made a YouTube video where he was like, yeah, I'm still alive. If anybody wants to do Samurai Cop 2, I guess here I am. So
wait, why didn't anyone like check to see if he was still alive?
I don't know. They just assumed he was dead. They assumed it was the same guy.
Well, I assume you guys are all dead in weeks between when we're not doing the show.
So it's a surprise every time,
every time
we do this.
That's really weird. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so as soon as they found out that he was alive, they emailed him and were like, hey, dude, we should talk. And he was totally open for it. And so they had spent like a year on the script, and then they had to like rework it and get him into
what?
It.
What?
It's like, yeah.
They wrote a script without checking if he was dead?
Yes. Yes.
You know, I really wonder what they would have done if they'd emailed him and he just showed up as this like fat, bald guy. Yep, here for Samurai Cop 2.
Quick takes.
What were your just sort of surface thoughts? I don't want to, okay, let me first say, I don't really want to get into the plot going point by point because we'll be confused in here all night long. So let's just talk about it in generalities. But so Chris, just overall, what did you think?
All right. My first thought about this is, okay, how many gangs were there for one? Like it seemed like there were like 50 gangs going on and all of them Japanese, but were there not enough Asian actors in California to actually play the Japanese gangsters?
I guess not.
Everyone was either white, a porn star or a white porn star.
Very true.
They put sunglasses on everyone who, you know, wasn't Asian. It's just so you couldn't tell.
So overall, Chris, would you enjoy this? Nah, yes, maybe.
You know, actually about halfway through, once I just kind of stopped, I just started rolling with it halfway through. There were a few scenes where it's like the old actors from the Samurai Cop 1, they got together and it looked like they were having a pretty good time making this. And I kind of started getting into it about halfway through. Okay. So,
what about you, Mike?
I was worried because there were rumblings that this movie wasn't very good. Like, it was hard to watch, kind of bad.
Where did you hear those rumblings?
But from you.
I said that?
you
probably from me.
Or one of you was commenting about how, like, oh, this is hard to watch. And so
yeah, that was
okay,
me.
So you, okay, so I was like, I was expecting low. And I was pleasantly surprised. Also, the trailer put me off because the trailer made it look like it was a super futuristic, like, space movie. And I was kind of not wanting that to be the case. But it was pretty true to the original. Like, it went a little... It was 25 years later.
What?
Yeah. What do you mean, what?
No.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
I'm excited about this. I was thinking that we might all be on the same page with this movie, but we might actually have some dissension.
Are you going to be the naysayer for this episode, Paul?
My quick take is that I think the filmmakers put themselves in a difficult situation right off the bat just by making this movie, because it wouldn't be wise to recreate the original in any sense, because you can't do that. It's a cult classic. And to try to mimic that film, I think, would be a misstep. So they took it in a different direction, but I just didn't have any fun watching it. So I'm really struggling to, you know, I understand that it was a completely different animal. And maybe I just didn't expect that going into it, but it was just hard to get through.
I see what you're saying.
I mean, for me, I don't remember a thing about Samurai Cop 1. And so I think that helped me going into this movie, because I'm like, oh, okay, I'll just take it on its own merits. And also, Bai Ling kind of does it for me. So
something big is about to happen here, and you cannot escape.
Sure. And then all the porn actresses in it, right? Caden Cross and Lexi Bell and all of them. They're all
Mike, did you do a lot of research on the cast?
No, I had done pre-search. I was very familiar with a handful
their work.
Of the women.
I gotta say, I did find apparently a deleted scene, because all the nudity in this movie was like edited out with
that,
like, stars
why?
Or something. But I did see, I did find a scene on YouTube with Bai Ling making out with the with Lexi Bell and one of the other girls. One of the other porn star was one of the other porn stars. Yeah.
Did it have the same kind of weird censoring over the lady parts?
No, it was like full nude.
Can we talk about this censoring? Because the movie starts out with a sex scene, right? Like, it's supposed to be a sex scene right off the bat. Pre-credits, pre-title, sex scene. And then when you see the woman stands up and you're like, oh, there's the boobs, but it's just glowing, like laser boobs.
It's just spots of glowing censorship.
And the spots of glowing censorship are clearly a special effect, because I've seen Lexi Bell's movies before, and she does not naturally have those glowing spots on her breasts.
No?
Totally.
Thank you for confirming that, Chris.
Wanted to throw that out there. That was done in post-production.
My quick take on this was I feel like it was a good group of people who had the best intentions, but their reach sort of exceeded their grasp.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I totally agree with Paul that, like, it was a really difficult thing to try to do this movie in the first place. Cause you know, the first one wasn't trying to be a cult movie, you know, and then this one, it kind of has to be a pastiche, you know, it's like just by making it, you're trying to bottle whatever lightning the first one got. And it's always hard to do that.
Well, and you don't bring Tommy Wiseau into anything without you're trying too hard at that point.
Yeah, no, Tommy Wiseau's addition was dumb.
Yeah. I think that's a good point actually, because to me, the fact that they brought him in and brought some of these other actors in from the first film, you know, they're kind of playing an homage to the first film in a way, and not making a straight action movie. And it's all very tongue-in-cheek. Joe breaks the fourth wall multiple times.
Oh my God, every time. Well, no, Frank does it more. Too. Frank fucking does it constantly. Every goddamn scene Frank's in, he breaks the fourth wall.
And stuff like that just takes me out of it because it reminds you, hey, you're watching a movie, and how are you supposed to get into that?
Yeah, no, I feel like the tone was a little uneven. Like, I kind of wish that they had committed a little bit more to, well, pretty much everything they were trying. I wish they went a little further with the comedy. I wish they went a little further with the action. A little further with the nudity. A little further with the violence. just up everything just a little bit.
Yeah.
But right after I saw this, I was looking for something along the lines of Hobo with a Shotgun, because I think that I think that is an example of a film that perfectly walks the line between serious like film attempt and parody of a genre. And so I was kind of like going hoping that this would be that, and yeah, you know, it kind of wasn't. I still had some fun watching it, but you know, I feel
like, to me, that's kind of the tone that they were going for, actually.
I think that was the attempt. But again, there was a podcast that I listened to about this movie, where this guy from England, he must have donated tens of thousands of dollars to the film on Kickstarter, because he got to go to the private screening, before it was released. He sat in the theater with Matt, and they watched the movie together before anyone else saw it. So he just must have donated a ton. And so he told us all of these, you know, backstories of it. And it just seems like a really great group of filmmakers who are trying to do something fun. And it, you know, just kind
of
didn't.
I think some of that comes out in some of the scenes, like Io thought, like all the scenes with the police chief and in the, like the police station were pretty fun. I think, Frank and Joe had a pretty good chemistry still.
Oh yeah.
All their scenes together. So
that was probably my favorite part of the movie, period, was the chemistry between Matt and Mark Fraser, Joe and Frank. I think they were a great couple.
I wish they would have. I wish they would have made out a little bit.
I think I would have preferred if the film was just, honestly, more true to its title, straight up vengeance. I like the fact that Tommy Wiseau is a young lad who, by the way, somehow went in like in 20 years or 25 years, he aged 50 years, but whatever.
50 like, to 70, yeah. We're still not sure.
We're not sure.
Hey, living with the Yaksusas is a tough life.
Yeah. I'm baffled about how they keep calling Joe a hero, right? And we've seen the first movie, and nothing big happens in that movie, right? Like, they stop a drug gang, but they kill everyone involved. Like, it's way not a... It's not good. So, like, how is he, like, some sort of a national hero? Because he stopped one single, like, drug bust.
Yeah.
And
like, everybody knows who he is and everything.
Yeah, he's they, like, really blew it out of proportion.
What you said, Mike, that Tommy Wiseau, it was a little too far for you?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's just obviously you're pandering at that point. Like, you're getting him in. I think it was good. It was cool to get all the old people in, especially when the guy that got his arm cut off in the first movie shows
up.
That
was awesome.
That was great. That was great.
His arm is still in a sling 25 years later.
Yeah, it is still in a sling. But he, like, got, you know, I wish he was a bigger part in the movie. Like, maybe found him right before that third act or something, as if this movie was structured in acts. And, like, he shows up because he turns his life around, apparently, between the two movies. He was leading a life of crime. He got his arm cut off, and that really changed his mind and decided he should start doing good for this world. And so I really wish he would have then picked up, like, one gun or something, you know, and, like, helped him out. That would have been great.
And then he could have lost his other arm, and it would have been great.
Yeah, that would have been good, too.
And then in Samurai Cop 3, he can lose a leg.
Yeah, just slowly just paring him down.
I totally agree. I love that guy came back, and rewatching the first one, like, on Saturday morning at, like, 6 a.m., I realized, like, he doesn't have any lines in the first movie. Like, this is his first...
No?
Samurai Cop 1 and 2 are that guy's only two credits in film. And he doesn't have any lines in the first film. So this was his, like, true acting debut. And wow. I could have used more of it.
Yeah.
Paul, what did you think about some of the people coming back?
Well, I had seen Samurai Cop, obviously, at the B-Movie Marathon a couple of years ago. And then I rewatched about half of it leading up to you know, us doing the Samurai 2 episode right now. So I didn't get a chance to watch the whole thing, and so it was a little disjointed for me. But I agree with Mike. The whole thing was very wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and I understand that there's an element of that where they're trying to keep it kind of light and fun, but I guess I was just looking for more of a straight action movie. And so it's not the fact that some of those people from the first movie were included in the film. It's how they used them and what they did with them where I'm just like, okay, I'm just not into it.
Okay. No, I see your point. I mean, there was, I think some of them were underused, even though some of them had bigger parts in two than in one. That guy that kept showing up where he shows up on the plane as the stewardess or whatever, and then he picks him up in the end and the tactic. Like, he's in one scene in Samurai Cop 1.
See, that that was kind of confusing, too. Well, he's a memorable character in Samurai Cop 1, but the fact, and they didn't need to do, they gave him a weird backstory of him being a drug runner, right?
I think so.
And so, like, they totally did. Okay. And, like, it doesn't make, that doesn't make sense. Like, you don't need to give him that backstory. He's a memorable, weird character from the first movie. Just have him show up again.
Yeah.
Like,
fine. Jay, I know you said that you don't really want to go point by point with the plot, but I think we do need to talk about it, because one of my biggest problems was that I had so much trouble figuring out what the fuck was going on almost the entire time.
Yeah, I was gonna go into that a little bit.
I think that's a testament to the movie, because that's exactly what Samurai Cop 1 is, too. Like, it doesn't make any sense. The whole fucking thing is all over the place.
You think it was by design?
The structure of the first movie is, hey, we're just going to show up at different houses in the suburbs of L.A. and shoot guns at each other, or paintball guns. So, like, then the second one is fairly similar, just showing up different places. No reason why anyone's anywhere, and they're just doing their shit.
I heard a rumor that they shot without a script for, like, a week.
I'd believe that with Bai Ling's and Tommy's lines, they just let them be themselves.
Yeah.
Just, Tommy had to wear dark glasses in every scene so he could read his lines off of cue cards off camera.
Not surprised one bit.
So, oh, well, Paul, and I don't know if you want to talk about this at all, but you interviewed Tommy.
Yes.
One time. What was that like?
I interviewed him a couple different times, and the thing about Tommy is you just never know what you're going to get on any given day. The first time that I interviewed him, he was very cordial, super friendly, super nice. We chatted for quite a while. And you can watch the interview on YouTube. Maybe we'll post a link down below. But the next time that that actually was the only time that I did interview him, because the next time that I attempted to interview him, he just would not have anything to do with it. He was cranky. He was dismissive. He's a diva, you know? So it's really difficult to have him anywhere, especially on a set, because you just don't know what you're going to get from him.
Hmm. I wonder how many days they were actually shooting with him.
Well, a handful. I was surprised at the amount of scenes that he was in.
Yeah, he's a pretty big part of the movie.
I would still say they could probably have done all his stuff in 2 days.
Entirely
possible.
Yeah,
but there was a few locations he was in, though. I wonder if, with the budget for the set, how many of those sets they had built at the same time. Do you think they would have had them all going?
Well, the two of the main gangs had the same set for their same hideout.
Oh, was it? Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a reused set. Well, fair enough. They just they colored it differently.
And I think the plane scene was just a reused porn set.
God, the plane scene was so, like, I don't know how I feel about it. I think I liked it, but I don't know if that's true.
Okay, so, yes, we have to go into the plot a little bit here. And so, just very briefly, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's 25 years after Samurai Cop 1. Detective Frank Washington is forced to team up with his long estranged partner, Joe Marshall, who is the Samurai Cop, to solve a series of assassinations. There's three groups of assassins. They're all fighting and killing people, and the Samurai Cop has to stop them. That's pretty much it. It's just them running around, everyone fighting everybody. And one of the scenes that they do that most boldly and obviously in is that plane scene.
Is that what that was? That was an assassination?
I don't know.
I have no idea. I thought it was just some, like, someone trying to sell kale chips.
How about some kale chips, mister?
Yeah. No, you literally read the back of the box there, right? That's the back of the box description.
Pretty much.
You said a series of assassinations, and my brain went, what assassinations? Like, just instantly, what are you talking about? I just watched this movie.
Well, the gangs are assassinating each other, I guess, but...
No, that's just gang fights. That's not assassinations.
Yeah.
Assassinations, like, if the president gets shot. Like,
yes.
Or the mayor, at least. Give him a mayor or something. Like, that's just gang warfare.
Right, so he's basically trying to stop gang warfare again. Pretty much.
Again,
it's the same three gangs, which I can't remember the name of the third gang, but it's only very, very briefly mentioned.
The Yik Lung.
Lick Lung, god damn it.
The Katana Gang, I thought, was the main one. And then there was, like, the fake FBI. The
Katana Gang is the biggest
one. The whole thing kicks off because one of the gangs is granted, and I've got this written down here, the Interuniversal Treaty.
What?
So that's one of the gangs is given an interuniversal treaty by some politician, but apparently having the authority to do this, and that lets them, like, gets rid of all their crimes they've previously committed, and absolutely baffling that, like...
And what Bai Ling mentions later, and almost in the end, she's like, I will control all the planets. I'm like, what?
I thought that's what goddamn Tommy said at the end. He says 25 planets. He fucking says that. And I turned on, I've got a thing for later, guys. You wait. I fucking turned on closed captions to make sure that's what I heard. And they didn't, they changed the words. But I'm like, I know he says fucking planets.
I would hate to have that person's job trying to do the closed caption Tommy Wiseau on this movie.
Paul, we're playing a game. Later, I've got a game where I want to play. I've got clips from, well, not clips, I've got words from his final speech, and I've also took a random sentence generator on the internet and got me 5 random sentences, and I want you guys to pick who did what.
Yeah,
Tommy lines or random sentence.
Yeah,
awesome. Sweet. And well, and also the one of the porn stars had like this glowing ball that shot lasers out of it.
Oh yeah,
that's one thing I wanted to get into. Like, this movie is so close to being like a cyberpunk movie. It's like, yeah, you've got Yakuzas, you've got, there was some line made about corporations run the world or something that you never see any evidence for. This big glowing ball.
That's why I was so confused when Mike at the top of the show said that he thought it was similar to the tone of the first movie. I'm like, what? No.
Well, no, but I think it is in terms of structure and like, whatever, but no, it is 25 years later, but they don't make it that much more bonkers. I mean, it is more bonkers, but like, it's not as much as I thought the trailer looked like. The trailer made it look like fucking Joe was frozen for 25 years, and yes, the Austin Powers out of it, and they fucking do this and that. It wasn't that bonkers.
Well, which was, he did just live in a basement for those 25 years.
Well, yeah, it's a pretty cool spot.
He made
though.
Little coins. He made little early on. Like, one of the first things that happens is a young Tommy Wiseau, played by a kid, just walks up and point blank shoots Joe's wife and kills her.
Wait, that's who that was?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yes. I forgot about that. Yeah.
Mike, didn't you just watch this movie?
Yeah, but I didn't get that from that.
Oh, yeah. That's what he says.
I thought that was the same time period.
No.
Yeah, it looked like that. It is yeah, really confusing.
They didn't put any younger like makeup on Joe, so he was just playing a younger version of himself 25 years later. And then they skipped. Yeah, that was the young Tommy Wiseau. That's how he got into the gang or running the gang.
Oh, that explains the story he told.
That I like. Like, I like the idea that this young person kills Samurai Cop's wife and it sends him into a downward spiral, and then 25 years later he comes back for revenge. That's Deadly Vengeance.
Right.
That's all it should have been.
Right.
Just hunting down that story.
That's the problem, really, is at the core there's a good story there, but they added in all this other stuff with the characters and all the weird sci-fi stuff and the kale chips.
Kale chips.
How about some kale chips, mister?
If you just
we should be eating kale chips right now.
If you just strip that out, maybe there's actually a good story there.
Paul, they sprinkled in a little Fifth Element, and, you know, can you blame them?
Yes,
there's a lot. There's a lot sprinkled in here.
But really, the main thing is we got Jay saying he likes killing children a minute ago, so we can just cut this off and podcast over, blackmail, we're good, right?
Wait a minute, what did I say?
Yeah.
So, I would say 90% of the film is kind of this mishmash of gang warfare and them just getting into shootouts. There's a love story with Joe. He meets another woman on the plane. He meets her on the plane.
Mm-hmm.
And wouldn't you know it, she turns out to be a gang member.
One of the porn stars.
Which...
Yeah.
Well, she's a triple agent, right? Like, we find out at the end, supposedly, she's a triple agent. Right?
Yeah, and she says...
Was that what happens?
We're skipping around, but I don't think there's any other way to do this. She confesses to being Tommy's sister.
Mm-hmm. Wait,
In the last scene.
Then
she makes out with him, and that's the last shot of the movie.
Yeah.
It's her kissing him.
God.
The last shot of the movie is Lexi Bell saying she'll be back or some shit.
Well, right. There are some credit shots.
Somebody look up the name of the other porn star, because I've definitely jerked off to her.
Caden Cross.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
No follow-up questions for that.
Yeah, she's got a very extensive IMDb.
Does she?
She is in a handful of stuff. She's been moving out of the adult roles a little bit. Also just a lot of adult roles on there.
I thought she did a perfectly fine job.
Honestly, I did not think she was a bad actress at all.
Yeah.
No. And she was fantastic. You know who was a bad actor, though?
Hmm.
That Seth Green knockoff on the plane that just spews random, like, fake Asian words the whole time.
Oh, I would love to know what the director said to him to get him to do that. Because that was just out of nowhere.
I'm pretty sure. Okay, so the whole time it was happening, he's on the plane and he's in the movie later as supposedly some good fighter. And he's just, and literally this is not me doing a fake Asian thing. This is what he was doing. Ching chong, ching chong, chak chai, ching ching. Like, it was awful. It was absolutely just
great. We just
terrible.
Lost our Asian listenership now.
No, well, just don't watch this movie. But the thing is, I think it was all for one single joke, because when he dies, Joe says the kill line, maybe you should have gone to Japanese school.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes me think that they set that whole fucking thing up for that one bad joke.
It's possible.
We can only hope.
I wonder if there's any sort of weird Kickstarter thing going on, because we mentioned that this movie was funded through Kickstarter. So did they have any sort of deal where if you contributed X amount of dollars, you got a small part in the movie?
Yeah,
I
looked up the Kickstarter campaign right before we started recording, and I mean, I didn't have a chance to look too much into it, but it looked like if you did donate a certain amount of money, you got to be in the movie.
Because there's just so many people in this movie just randomly spattered in.
Yeah, okay, yeah. If you donate $5,000, you can choose in which way specifically we will be overtly racist. Yeah, okay.
No.
Yeah, I kind of wish they wouldn't have done that part.
God.
You know, there's also supposed to be a feature documentary coming out about the making of this movie. I kind of feel like that would be... Yeah, I feel like that would be pretty interesting, actually.
Yeah, I was hoping that was out. I was going to try to find it, but then I realized it wasn't. I don't think it's out yet.
Paul, as the person who seems to be the most down on the movie, what are some of the things that you liked?
Well, I definitely absolutely loved seeing Joe and Frank back together. I thought that was the highlight of the movie. I thought, you know, they definitely have good chemistry, and having them be together again and, you know, do some fight scenes and stuff like that and some one-liners, that was fun, and I wish there probably would have been more of just sticking to that, you know.
Did you think that Frank kind of got lost in the end?
Yeah, he did. So
I was a little upset about that.
I'm intrigued. You know, I didn't know this about having written the script and then having to go back and change things. It really kind of makes you wonder how much of that carried over into the final product or not.
Yeah, and I'm sure Frank was very gracious about stepping aside for the actual samurai cop, but you got to think at some point, you know, I don't think he's got a giant career in Hollywood.
Right.
So to have you be the lead role and then have to kind of step back, it would be a little difficult, I bet.
Well, it sounds like those two must not have... kept in very close contact if he didn't know whether or not Matt was dead or alive.
Yeah, no, he said he just moved kind of out of the industry. He like did some grip work around Hollywood, and I think he probably still does. And most of what he does is he runs conventions. So like if there's
Frank, we're talking about the back.
No, we're talking about Joe.
Oh, Matt.
All right.
Matt, yeah. He actually runs conventions. So he's like the foreman for like when a big convention will come into like, I think even like San Diego. I think it's the whole Southern California area.
Hmm.
He'll be the guy in charge of making sure everything runs smoothly to get the convention set up for the opening.
Interesting.
So that's just kind of what he does. And he had a couple daughters and just kind of moved on.
Yeah.
So it's really nice because in all of the interviews, you can just see he's a very, very down-to-earth person who is just enjoying the moment and never thought it was going to come again.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool. It's like it really makes you root for him and the movie to succeed.
So, Jay, do you think we'll ever see him run a samurai con?
If he does and it's in the Chicagoland area, I'll be there.
All right.
Uh-huh. So what about Chris? What stood out for you?
All right. Well, two things mainly. One, what kind of sushi place serves donuts? I don't know if anybody caught that. Have this donut, Joe. And like, what kind of white woman running a sushi place is going to, like, have an in into the Japanese underground crime syndicate?
She was in number one.
What? Yeah. What?
She was in the first one. She was a cop that with.
Right.
She was the dish.
So now she's running a sushi joint that also, you know, sushi/donut place, and she still keeps up with Japanese crime. So that's...
Wait, is that the diner?
Kind of cool.
At the diner, yeah.
At the diner,
she
yeah.
She also had glasses of wine and pasta under the counter.
Yes, she did. Yes. And I forgot the pasta.
Just and ready.
Doesn't Joe say Frank is a cliche in that scene? I think so. That's also... Is in that diner when they make the maniac cop reference?
Yeah,
because somebody says something and Joe goes, "Yeah, there's a lot of maniac cops running."
Groan.
I didn't know. I haven't seen those movies. If like somebody involved in this film was also involved in Maniac Cop,
Robert Zadar.
What's a Maniac Cop? Yeah,
Robert Zadar's
in those.
Little reference to him. That's fine, but you know, again, just I'm sorry, Chris. Just all the self-referential wink, wink, nudge, nudge stuff. I just wasn't into it.
Yeah, I totally get that.
How would Robert Zadar had come back? Because he was supposed to.
Oh, wow.
They had signed several people, actually. George Lazenby was supposed to be in it.
Yeah.
Didn't work out. So yeah, there were like six actors that were supposed to be in this. I don't know where they would have put them, to be honest.
I'm sure Zadar would have been one of the gang bosses by that point.
Probably. Lexi would have gotten cut in favor of Robert Zadar.
Robert Zadar's glowing breasts.
So, Chris, did you say you had something else that stood out for you besides the diner?
Yeah, the one other thing was at the end when before Joe fights Tommy, he fights Bai Ling, who apparently were like a fling that was never at all once.
Oh my God! Yeah,
a Bai Ling fling.
Yeah, Bai Ling fling. And but when he finally stabs her, I think the entire CGI budget went towards her blood because it was just flowing.
Horrible.
Like she's a tiny woman and just gallons and gallons of blood. CGI blood is just like pouring out of her like he stabbed the Kool-Aid man and the Kool-Aid just flowing out of her body. It was just ridiculous.
But it looked terrible. It looked like they got the team from Amazing Bulk to do that for one day.
You know, I will say though, I liked Bai Ling in the movie.
Yeah.
I think
she played herself.
She brought just a certain amount of like, I don't know, weird, unhinged, crazy. I liked it. So I thought she was a good cast. Mike, what about, anything stand out? What'd you dig?
One thing that I dug was I think I dug it maybe somewhat ironically because I couldn't quite grasp what was happening, but the goddamn mole in the gang that they had named Molaram, which is just the guy from Indiana Jones's name, and I like that he shows up. He fucking shows up and he shoots one, like there's like these two samurais that they have that Joe has to fight, and he shows up behind them and he's like, "I'm Molaram," or whatever he fucking yells, And then he's wearing a trench coat because he's like a, I don't know, like a Carmen Sandiego spy. And he shoots the main guy and he yells, "Don't forget Molaram!" And then runs away.
"Remember Molaram!"
And then as he runs away, and the son of the guy who was just killed is like giving this speech, the sad speech of how he'll take his dad's, like, he'll take vengeance upon him. And Molaram just runs back and shoots the kid and then runs off again.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That was good. And speaking of Molaram, do you remember? Okay, so in both films, Joe at one point goes to this like movie editing house where this old guy is like cutting film, supposedly
like the last old school Hollywood editor.
Yeah, but yeah. I think he's supposed to be involved in like the CIA or something, looking at like secret film.
Was
or
something. Was he in the first movie?
Yeah, same type of thing, same deal.
Okay.
And so he just gives Joe information. But like when he says, because he tells Joe that there's a mole. And he says his name is Molarama.
Yeah.
Totally blows his name.
Yep. Well, he looked like he was about 95 years old, so.
Yeah. He probably had one take.
He's still editing film, Paul. I mean, come on.
Someone's got to do it.
What about you, Jay? What stood out for you that was good?
Well, I think I said earlier my favorite thing hands down was the interaction between Joe and Frank.
Yeah.
I really like them as like a buddy cop pairing. I would see, if there was a Samurai Cop 3, I would see it just for that.
Yeah.
To be honest. I would buy into it.
Joe had a tagline in this movie, and I can't decide if he said it in the first one. I don't remember. He kept saying, "Keep it warm." Like,
yes.
It was some sort of inside joke.
"Oh, it's up and ready. You just keep it warm."
"It's warm and ready."
That's from the first movie, yeah.
Okay.
Because he's talking about I think it's the woman in the donut sushi diner. I think he says it. She says something like, "Are you going to come by later?" And he says something like, "Maybe keep it warm for me," or "Maybe keep it warm." So yeah, that's a throwback. So is Bingo.
Who was it? Some woman was trying to seduce him and he didn't want a piece of it. And he's just like, "I guess don't keep it warm."
So we never see Tommy die. Bring him back for Samurai Cop 3 or no?
No.
Pass.
No. Pass.
All right. Speaking of Tommy, can we play my game, guys?
Absolutely.
Yes.
All right. So I have quotes from that final scene with Tommy where he's talking trash effectively. Well, not effectively, but he's talking trash to Joe. And Joe's just listening to him spew garbage. And so I have these quotes from that speech, and I've got randomly generated sentences.
So how's this going to work?
I want you to tell me which one.
Okay.
Chime in.
Each one of us guesses?
Yeah, sir. We'll start here. We'll start with you, Paul. Who said this? The random generator or Tommy Wiseau? "There is no room for the words."
That's not proper sentence structure, so that's got to be Tommy.
"There is no more room for words."
That was Tommy.
Yeah.
All right, Chris. "No one can stop me, but I can stop myself, and I will not stop myself."
Oh, God. I can. You know what? That's got to be Tommy.
"No one can stop me, but I can stop myself. But I will not stop myself, Joe."
That was a little obvious, I think.
not even a random sentence generator can come up with something that crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Jay, "When I reversed Little Boy."
What?
"When I reversed Little Boy."
"When I reversed Little Boy"?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess internet.
Nope, that's Tommy.
Is it?
"When I reversed Little Boy."
"When I reversed Little Boy," which I assume means grew up. Like, I
don't... Hey, I've got one for you, Mike.
What?
"Rad blood, Joe. Rad. She haunt me wherever I go."
It never ends.
I left out, since we talked about it earlier, the sentence, "25 planets, I built them all."
Yeah, Jesus Christ. Well, good job with the game, Mike.
For the listener out there, all of these of his are all from the same speech somehow.
Oh my God.
Rating time.
So, Chris, how many glowing nipples would you give Samurai Cop 2?
Parts of it were enjoyable. Others were kind of like, not so much. I think it tried way too hard, but the charisma between the main actors was pretty good, I think. So that raised it up a bit. And, you know, Bai Ling and her all of her blood raises it up a bit. So I'm going to give it, you know, high 60s, 65, 70 kale chips.
How about some kale chips, mister?
Okay. All right. Mike, are you going kale chips or glowing nips?
I'm going glowing nips, not those kale chips. I don't think that some of the cheese that has been mildly complained about was that egregious, really. So I'm gonna give it 77 glowing nips.
Wow. Okay, Paul.
That is entirely too high. this movie was hard to watch. I understand that people had good intentions, but at the end of the day, for me, difficult to get through. I would probably give it an even lower score if it weren't for Joe and Frank, you know, just being together again and getting to see them in action one more time. So because of that, I'll go 43 out of 100 glowing nipples.
Ouch. Okay. I feel like I'm somewhere in the middle of Chris and Mike. I'm going to go 73 glowing nips. I thought this was fun. I thought it was fun. I also watched it twice. Yeah, the guy that was running that podcast I told you about who was involved, he actually got to like run a Q&A at this premiere and stuff. But anyway, he was like begging people. He's like, you've got to watch this more than once.
Hmm.
He's like, you can't just watch it one time. He's like, you will be confused. The more you watch it, the more you're going to get out of it. And I'm like, okay, I'll try it. So I watched it again. It was still kind of hard to follow. I will admit there was a lot more that came together just because I could follow everything a little bit easier. But just the very fact that I had to do that was a little weird.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think just what it is, I had fun with it. I think it would be more fun, you know, in a group.
That's my thought. Yeah, I would like to watch it again with a group.
And I am definitely, you know, there's several movies that I like that are the same sort of thing where, you know, even Big Lebowski, to be honest. The first time I saw it in the theater, I'm like, okay, it was kind of all right. But it's one of those movies where there's things kind of lying under the surface, and if you give it a couple more go-arounds, you start to pick up on it. So I'm not opposed to giving this movie another shot down the line.
Yeah, this movie has a real Coen charm to it.
It doesn't at all. It doesn't at all. But you understand what I'm saying, that sometimes there are things, if you do give it a second or third viewing, that you can pick up on a little easier.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend getting together with some friends. And another reason I didn't mind watching it again was because the first time after it was done, I was like, what the hell did I just watch? Like, what just happened? And So going through it again, it was just a little helpful.
But you know what? At the end of the day, kudos to the filmmakers. Kudos for getting everybody back together. I mean, they made it happen. They made the damn movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll say right now, if there's a Samurai Cop 3 Kickstarter, I'm going to donate to it.
I'll donate.
Why not?
Easily.
That about does it for Samurai Cop 2, Deadly Vengeance. Mike, I think we're going to pass it over to you for the next pick. What do you got?
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
I hope you ninjas aren't a bunch of chicken bigots, because I have a real fresh flick for next time. We're riding to Western Shangri-La, and it's gonna be Cheddar. We're watching Violent J and Shaggy 2 Dope in Big Money Rustlers.
In case you guys are confused, God, that would be it. The Insane Clown Posse.
No! Are you serious?
Yeah, they made a movie called Big Money Hustlers. And that existed. And then they made another movie that takes place in the Wild West called Big Money Rustlers. And you can find it for free on Amazon. There's two versions. There's a PG-13 version and a rated R version. I'm going to say we should just watch the rated R version, just a heads up on that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so how do you guys feel about that?
Actually, it would be funnier if we watched a PG Wild West Insane Clown Posse version.
Mike, do you think we're all going to be juggalos after this?
Hell yeah.
God, they just played down the street from me, too.
Really? Where do you live?
I live Jesus. No, I told you about this. I told you. There's a bar right, it's like a 5-minute walk from my apartment. Insane Clown Posse played at this bar like 2 weeks ago. I told you guys
Chris
about it.
Chris lives in some juggalo shithole.
Chris lives in a place where the Insane Clown Posse plays.
They were 5 minutes away from my house.
I like to think that you live in a place where they frequent.
Chris, do the street signs outside of your home say Dark Carnival?
There's just little juggalos getting on this bus in the morning.
Hey, Chris, are all the vending machines near you lined with Faygo drinks?
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydie? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out, touch them. They're touching themselves, and they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
Red blood, Joe. Red!